You're listening to Mostly Technical, which is brought to you by Lair Jobs, the official Laravel job board, and screencasting.com, where you can learn how to create high-quality screencasts faster than ever. Now, Ian and Aaron.
Welcome back.
We're back, baby. How we doing?
Woo! We're ready to go. Monday morning.
Yep. Monday morning, 8:30 local time.
9:30 real time.
Ready
to do it. Let's go.
Back at it. This is my last week. I go back on Friday.
Ooh, on Friday? That's a crazy day.
I know, weird, right?
Yeah.
I know.
Well, I guess it's kind of cool. It's like just one dip your toe in on a Friday and
open some emails, kiss some babies, shake some hands, and then peace out for the weekend.
Now, have you totally stayed off the email? That's what you're implying right there.
Oh yeah. When your job is not like a high-level engineer that is responsible for things, you just don't get that many emails. You really don't.
Yeah. Nobody's really looking for you at 2 a.m. No. Like something's broken or whatever. Yeah.
No, the real thing is YouTube comments. That's the real inbox I got to manage. The email is just like sometimes I'll get emails to like the entire education team.
Right.
And then beyond that, that's about it, honestly.
it's
a good life.
I forget what it's like to have a job. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I'm behind on email lately. So I've never been behind on email ever. But I'm a little bit behind this last month, and it's kind of like weighing on me. So like, I got a couple things I got to do in there. And then, well, you know what I also do? I don't think we talked about this. I think it might be my favorite app on the phone is an app. I believe it's just called Mail2. Let me check this real quick. Yeah, it's called Mail-O. Maybe it's called Mail-O. Yeah, Mail-O.
Hmm.
And what it is you can just anytime you bring up a share sheet in iOS, you can just click its icon and it just emails a link to whatever the thing is. And so to myself, it just emails
gotcha.
To you. So it's my little to-do list of like, oh, I want to read this thing or whatever.
Oh,
I'll research
cool.
this thing more, whatever. And I'll just do the Mail-O thing. I don't have to like copy and paste into Notion or anything. Like, it's just in my inbox.
Yeah.
And normally I just like work through the inbox. I'm like, all right, like if I'm going to do this later, I'll put it maybe in Notion, or most of the time I just deal with it right then. But okay, so I have like 10 of those stacked up in there of things I want to like read or research. And then I just have some actual email. It's kind of stressing me out. I got to spend a little time today or tomorrow.
Yeah, you don't seem like a guy that gets behind on email.
No, I'm an inbound zero
guy.
I'm
the guy that gets behind on email.
And
I'm so behind
email.
On email.
I don't have that much email in general. Like, we're a small team. Like, the team's not usually – we're in Slack. We handle most stuff in Slack, so it's not like a lot of company emails usually and things like that. So it's mostly like ends up being weird business stuff of like, you know, corporate stuff.
Right.
Tax
business
stuff
dad
or
stuff,
whatever. Yeah, that stuff. So it's stacked up in there. And but anyway.
It is stressful, right? It's like low-grade background stress.
Yeah, I don't know. People who just leave it messy all the time. And I'm a very messy person. Like in real life, my email, got to have my email just straight. I just like to not have too much in there.
Yeah, I got to get on top of that. That's honestly what I'm looking forward to being back for that reason, to get my digital life back under control. It's just when you're not on the computer and you're actively trying to stay away from it, it's hard to keep those gardens tended to, you know?
Yeah, that's all right. You'll give it a week. You'll get in there with the shears and clean it up. So
I got stuff to do, man. I got plans. It's time to go.
You were working on the new headquarters, though, the studios.
The studio.
So it's coming along.
Studios. It's coming along. It's almost ready for move in. I was going to move in many, many weeks ago, and then I just took a massive break from everything. But I was up there last week doing some more finishing touches and was getting really excited about it. I think it's going to be awesome. I'm super pumped.
Do you think you're going to use that for your first videos? Do you think you're going to be doing some videos before that's ready?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm going to get up there. Today's Monday. I go back Friday. I'm going to get in there this week.
Yeah. Get it organized.
Get all the lighting set up, get the camera moved over, the whole deal.
Once the camera's moved, that's it. Like,
it's game over. Yeah, exactly.
So, you have videos lined up, or what's the plan? Like, are you ready to go?
I have some,
I
have some
content ideas and things.
Planet scale videos that I have been thinking about that I'm ready to go with. And then I've got a lot of personal, Laravel videos that I'm ready to I'm ready to start cooking. So yeah, I'm ready. I feel, you know, mentally a lot better, physically still, you know, still a little wonky, still a little 75, 80 years old, but you know, mentally I'm feeling a lot better. I'm sleeping. I slept good last night.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
It's great. I love it.
Changes are helping. That's good.
The chili pad, I think, is helping.
Yes. So give us an update on the chili pad.
Yeah. So the chili pad came and it's like a mattress topper with a hose, you know, it looks all nice and stuff, but it's a freaking hose that runs out of it.
runs liquid under you to cool you or heat you or whatever you want.
Yep. And so I have it set to the coldest that it goes, which is like 55. Okay. And it doesn't feel, the thing is, it doesn't feel like 55 in the bed. I texted my friend who has one. I was like, dude, how cold do you set yours to? He was like, oh, I set mine to like, you know, 68 and I have to sleep with a t-shirt on. And I'm like, setting mine to 55 and sleeping with no shirt on. But I didn't wake up once last night, not a single time.
Wow.
Huge.
That's huge.
Huge change. Yeah, yes.
That's huge. Okay.
It's awesome. So I need to see if mine is functioning properly, because I feel like if he's sleeping at 70 and he's kind of cold and I'm sleeping at 55 and I'm like, it could be colder. I don't know if my unit is functioning properly, so I need to like investigate that. But on the whole,
something you can tell it's cooling it.
I lay down and it's
not as cold as you would like.
Yeah.
It could depend on like your sheets and stuff too. Like,
I know that's the bummer part.
Some other variation, you know, some other stuff in there potentially that's impacting it.
But you know, sometimes I'll, you know, I'm like laying super still and then I do feel like the outline of the water, like the pathways underneath me. I'm like, oh, okay, that part. Yeah, that part's actually pretty cold. So yeah, chili pad, big win.
Okay, so far, thumbs super, up. We'll have to maybe double back in a month and see how you feel about it. But the quick review is thumbs up.
Quick review is highly, highly effective. You know, I've had it for a week and I've slept so much better since I've had it.
Little podcast side business here is I kind of like us having a review segment. Like, we should have a review segment.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would people like just pay? Would people just pay and whoever pays the highest, we would review it? Is that how it goes?
If somebody wants to sponsor a review, we're happy to take your money if you'd like us to to review your product. But also just, you know, the little nifty things we find, like the chili pad and whatnot. Anyway.
I like that. Yeah. So if you have anything you want to send us, we could gladly receive your merchandise and we will review it.
Not about anything, but.
Not anything.
Better get approval.
Anything that I would like,
or not like.
If we don't like it, we won't review it.
Well, if we don't like it, those are fun reviews too. But I feel like I'm looking for things that I'm going to either really like, hopefully, or really hate, hopefully. I don't want things that are just okay.
That's true.
Just okay is not really very interesting to talk about.
If it's lukewarm, we spit it out of our mouths. Yeah, that's how it goes. So, chili pad, big 5-star, 2 thumbs up. Highly recommend if you're having sleep troubles that you think may be because you're waking up warm.
I've thought about getting one of these type of things. I don't know. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but maybe I'll have to give it a go.
Yeah, they're not inexpensive.
Yeah. And there's this whole like water, and if you have any issues there, it's like its own little disaster, which is
best,
but hopefully it's fine.
Hopefully.
All right, let's do some follow-up. We actually have quite a bit of follow-up, more follow-up. All right. So email in from Andrew Carnes. Do we have a technique for balancing consumption versus creation?
Oof.
I don't have a formal technique. I probably should be better about this, but I don't really have a great formal technique for that.
Do you consume a lot?
I guess it depends. Like, I definitely probably consume more Twitter than I would like. Just pop. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to just pop over. It's like, okay, I'm between things I'm working on. I pop over. I would like to organize that a little bit more. In the other parts of my life, not so much. Like, I'm not over consuming. I don't feel like, if anything, I'm under consuming. I feel like I could use a little more like R&R, just like throw on something mindless or something like that. In that regard, not really. But then also, you know, the consumption side, I think you could be more organized. It's like, or on the creation side, like, I'm kind of deep on this actual coding stuff right now, so that's kind of taking all the bandwidth, but still, there's other
things
I wouldn't mind
doing. Creation.
I know, but it's like sometimes you didn't want to have some variation in there. I don't have any variation right now, really, of other things. I'm doing this podcast here, right? So that's something.
Yeah, it counts.
I have some other things. I guess I do have some other things. The podcast is nice because it's like, that is more structured. It's like, hey, we're attempting every week on Monday to do this. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but usually we're here. And so that's a little more of a routine, which is nice. I don't know. But I don't really have anything formal. You?
No, I don't have anything formal. I think, like you, I'm also not a huge consumer outside of Twitter. As we've talked about many times, not doing a lot of gaming or TV right now these days. But Twitter, yeah, I consume a huge amount. I don't really feel so bad about it. Like you, it's kind of like, I'm going to look for 5 minutes and then get back to what I was doing. Anytime I just have downtime, I'm kind of like looking at Twitter, but I don't use Instagram. I don't use TikTok. I don't use anything else. So like Twitter is my only, feed of consumption.
Right.
And honestly, you know, I hit the limits of that pretty quickly. So I'm not just like scrolling for hours. And also I find that, you know, I just love Twitter so much. I find that it just stokes like so much, like it's a serendipity machine, you know, it just stokes so many ideas and so many, things that like, it just puts cool stuff in front of me. And so I'm super into it. And then on the creation side, no, I just kind of, you know, that's, you know, when I'm working full time, that's what I do full time, is just create things. Right. But I've also started, you know, doing the like voice recordings while I walk or while I drive. And I do find that like being able to get some of those thoughts out of my head is extremely helpful for me. And so squeezing that in more where I can now, as around other duties, I find to be really helpful. But no, I don't really think about it too much, honestly.
Yeah, not a big high structure kind of person in general, all the way to that level of like where I'm blocking out calendar chunks or things like that.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So. All right, another email from Chris Morell. He says scam emails are bad on purpose to filter top of funnel people down to those who can't identify bad scammy emails to begin with. So you're limiting your top of the funnel here, but you're hopefully getting more highly qualified leads, if you will, on the people you want to target for your scams. I don't know.
Wow, extremely interesting. What in the world is this a follow-up to? Did we talk about this? Did we? I remember none of this. 0% of this do I remember.
Yeah.
We talked about scam emails?
Yeah, we did. We mentioned it.
What?
We didn't have a whole segment, but we did touch on it shortly about how the scam emails are written poorly. And remember it was about how we were going to, we would make more money if we just engaged in doing scam emails ourselves at a higher quality.
So his feedback is that
our high quality ones would lead to a lot of
So it's a business plan critique.
Smart people who would get into that, but then they would later determine that, oh, this is a scam once I get on the phone with them or whatever. Whereas so that it's bad on purpose, so that you're already limiting the number of people you have to deal with intentionally, so that you can focus on the more easily scammed people.
Yeah, I barely remember any of this, but I'm forming very strong opinions as we speak. And this nonsense, we could fool them all the way down.
I think well, it's also multiple levels. Like, there's people, can we just fool them all the way down? I feel like you're presumably gonna automate quite a bit of this, so like more people's just better, I would think, in general.
But yeah, then, for sure.
You know, you could also have higher sort of upside scams. Like, maybe I'm trying to like just do a really good version of the Chase email with a Chase website, so that you're going to log in to change your password, and you're going to fool people who really know what they're doing to reset their password, and it's just coming to me instead, and I'm just going to steal all your money, right? So like, I feel like there's other things like that where the quality is important. Like, there's like Nigerian prince, you won the lotto, fine, that's kind of one type of scam. But there's also like a really high quality, I'm just going to steal all your shit from your bank level, which just has to be like pixel perfect and have errors when you log in incorrectly and like whatever. It's like just perfect, except we steal your shit. So I feel like, yeah, there's both sides of it, and we could cover it all in this business. Like,
so is this podcast a safe space? Am I allowed to say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
And as my attorney, because you're a podcaster, you're also an attorney.
Right, we're gonna
this is now confidential. So this is client attorney privilege. So I can't be prosecuted for this.
Absolutely not.
In college.
Oh, there was.
So statute of limitations has run. This is client attorney privilege. Nobody can get me in trouble for this legally. As long as you append legally to your statement, it's legal. So in college, there was this Twitter account that was called, I went to Texas A&M, we're called the Aggies. There was this Twitter account called Aggie Gossip. Mm-hmm. And it was just saying all these horrible things about a lot of people. And I was like, I bet I could fish this person and I bet I could get their password. And so in 2008 or nine, I created a phishing scheme.
We have the experience in-house. It's so great.
I created a phishing scheme where I made a website that looked just like the Twitter reset password website.
Look at this.
I hosted it somewhere random, you know, some random domain. And then I forget how I had their email. Oh, because they solicited tips.
Oh, right.
It was like, tips, if you have hot tips, send them to aggiegossip@gmail.com. I was like, all right. So I created this fake page, you know, stole all the CSS and HTML from the actual reset page, put it up somewhere, sent myself a password reset email from Twitter so I could get like the HTML for the email, and then created the email and sent it to Aggie Gossip, and it worked. I totally fished their password. It was Aggie09, which told us it was somebody in the class of 2009. It was great. And then I freaked out and I logged in as them and started just like trying to wreak havoc. You know, I'm unfollowing everyone. I'm trying to like, you know, change the email address to my own email address so I can take it over.
This is like a federal crime right here.
I know. That's what I'm saying. This is attorney-client privilege.
You
can't get me in trouble. Dave, I need you to check the law, Dave. If any of this is illegal, just cut this segment out.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then I got kicked out because I freaked out too hard and I didn't know what to do and it worked. And so I logged in as them and did some stuff and then I got booted. So isn't that wild?
That's wild.
I committed a federal crime, I think.
And look how easy it was. That's what I'm saying. Like we could be doing this as a profession and stealing money instead of unfollowing people on Twitter.
Instead of being digital Batman to clean up the streets of Gotham, I'm out there trying to steal money from people. That would be way better.
That's pretty awesome. I don't have
anything. Isn't that crazy?
Like that. I would have never thought you'd have a worse thing than me and
law
breaking. Crazy.
I know. It's crazy.
Man.
Sometimes I let my inspection sticker expire and I also will fish people from time to time. So
send people phishing emails illegally. Break the federal law.
So there you go, boss man Chris. It can be done and I have done it.
There you go.
Yeah. This would have been great on last week's segment when we were talking about it. I must have spaced on that segment altogether.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't have anything like that. I never actually tried it. We did once in high school, and I was just an accomplice. I was the driver. I was the driver on a selling a bag of oregano as marijuana once. Yeah, made $10. So that was my big statute of limitations there we go.
I don't think that's illegal. I think that's just funny.
Hey, maybe that's not even illegal, right?
Who knows? You're not selling
it's not
drugs.
A legal substance. Although if we're claiming it's one thing and it's not, it seems like it might be illegal.
Yeah, maybe. That's hysterical.
These are the kind of things, I don't know. I don't think my kids are going to do these kind of things.
Also in high school, one time we were driving around shooting fireworks out of the car, like Roman candles, you know, so you got one guy driving and the other guy's hanging out the window shooting a Roman candle.
I was always too scared to do those things.
We shot one and it just went right over a cop car, right over two cops getting into their car at like a Wendy's or something. And they looked at us and we looked at them and my friend who was driving just took off.
Oh, wow.
And they got in their cop car. And I'm like, Sean, what are you doing? He takes off. You know, we're in like three different cars because, you know, we're 16 and we're all like, no, I'm going to drive. And so we took a hard right and our friend went straight and they pulled over our friend and we were gone.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Did they have fireworks in their car too?
So they did not have fireworks in their car. And so he pretended like he didn't know. So he's like, yeah, I saw that. I don't know what happened. And meanwhile, you know, we're doing 80 on the on-ramp trying to get away from them.
My God,
I was the accomplice. I was right. Just in the car. I didn't
just
do
happen
anything.
To be there. You'd only get like a year. The other guy's gonna get like 3-4 years. Yeah,
exactly. You're so it wasn't me.
You flip on everybody. You do no time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're actually still in jail, but I'm here. So anyway,
all right, we got one follow up.
Final follow up from friend of the pod, Mary. I don't know Mary's last name, but her handle is Seafrius. Anyway, met her at Laracon, Laravel developer, good friend. She DM'd me like mid listening to the podcast, the last one, and she said, "Aaron, don't do nicotine." Like, don't get into nicotine. I was like, "Oh, really? How, you know?" Because we talked about Zen and how awesome it is,
right?
And she sent me this whole like. This entire thing of don't do nicotine. It's so bad for autoimmune disease. And I was like, oh, you know what? I didn't think about any of that whatsoever.
You were just drawn in by the awesome website. You didn't even,
I was just drawn in by the awesome website. And I was like, would it be cool if I chewed nicotine gum? Probably. And then, you know, Mary's out here looking out for me. Don't do nicotine. So
you got to do.
Apparently if you have autoimmune disease, don't do nicotine. So
I don't know if they call it that down south, but dip. You know, like where you put the tobacco in there. You could be dipping. I'd love to have you dipping on the show where you're just like spitting into a cup every 5 minutes.
Can you imagine how disgusting that is?
Kind of awesome, actually.
I have some friends that would dip from time to time at work. And just imagine like having a spit cup on your desk. It's horrifying.
The grossest thing ever.
It's the grossest thing
it's
ever.
Very gross. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And just a total side note here, it's pretty funny how you're like, Mary, good friend. You don't know her last name. This is the internet. It's so funny.
This is the internet. Mary and I have talked life. We've been on Zoom calls talking life in Laravel. I couldn't tell you. No idea.
Right.
No idea.
So funny.
Can't even pronounce her handle. Seafrius. Seafrius. No idea.
Stuff's the worst from the internet. That's like, you've never had any idea to say anything.
But friend of the pod, friend of mine, Mary. We'll find out your last name soon, Mary.
We actually have another follow-up. It's just in the regular topic area of ChatGPT. So, like, we talked about on the show last week, ChatGPTing yourself and your style, and you did that, and you were kind of blown away.
I did that.
And then you put that on the Twitters, and other people were blown away.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of feedback. I don't know if there was anything in particular that you thought was interesting, as well as, like, if you've gone farther with it.
I haven't gone farther with it, but I put it out on Twitter last week after you told me to, and then I got tons of credit for the great idea. So awesome. Love that.
I know.
Good for me.
There you go.
I tagged you, but then people were quoting me, and it's like, well, you know, we lost Ian to the sands of time.
That's
sorry about
the
that.
The story of my life. Good idea, not the credit.
That's how it goes. I'll come back to that. I have a funny note on that. But it was great. Arvid Call did it, and he had a good idea to do like what is it, where like you make it challenge your writing style. And so he was like, tell me about the writing style of Arvid Call. Great, tell me how Arvid Call could improve. I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I need to do that. And then some people were doing it for like their open source issues and being like, how does this person respond to issues normally? And it's like, in a friendly and kind manner. And so if you haven't tried it yet and you have any amount of writing out there, give it a try. I think the next step for me is going to be, instead of like telling ChatGPT how to write, I'm going to tell ChatGPT to write as me, now that I know that it knows who I am.
Right. If that helps.
Yeah. To see if that helps get the style better the first time. Man, on that last article, it got it like 30% of the way there, which is just not that much. So
you could probably also start building out a more elaborate prompt, like as you see things it's not doing right, to like add to some baseline prompt with like, never do this and always do that and whatever.
Exactly,
flesh that out a bit.
So that's the goal. Super pleased with it. Good idea, Ian. Sorry that I stole all the credit, but
what's your side note there?
to the tweeter go the spoils. My side note is, speaking of losing your credit to the sands of time, there's this hysterical thing that my wife does sometimes where I'll just tell a killer joke, just like best joke, little quip response thing, right, but I don't say it super loud. And then my wife will take the exact same joke word for word and immediately say it louder and gets the roaring applause of the room. It's so great. She does it all the time to me. I'll have like a little side comment and be like, oh, this is hysterical. She'll laugh and say it louder and get the credit.
You gotta stop mumbling. Put your stuff out there.
I gotta stop mumbling. It's just the funniest thing. And then she's always like, oh no, that was Aaron's joke. Like, it's too late. Nobody cares. You get all the credit for that.
Yeah. It's all about the person who puts it out there. You got to put it out there.
What a scam. What a scam.
This is all part of your philosophy. You got to put it out there. It doesn't matter if you have the idea, whatever it is, wherever you find the idea, you be the one to put it out there.
I know.
You get the upside.
And maybe, maybe it's just that I'm workshopping material and I'm seeing how it goes over. But by the time I know that it went over well, she's already repeated it to the room.
Yeah. I mean, and she just gets to ignore the stupid shit you say. So this
she
way.
She does. Like, yes.
It's been pre-filtered. It's like, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah, I'll use that. I'll ignore the stupid stuff he says.
And what a scam.
Genius.
I know. She is a genius. All right. What else?
First topic here. We're going to do, you were traveling this week, so let's do this.
I traveled this week.
Checked bag versus no checked bag.
No this check.
I don't know if we're going to go the Dan Sheets method here.
Okay. I didn't want to say any names because I didn't want to out anybody.
He takes credit for this. We'll give him credit.
This is, I don't think he should have credit. This is a terrible idea.
You're counter.
This is crazy.
Idea. Okay.
This is crazy. So I traveled out of town this weekend with some friends, and Dan Sheets, since you named him, I'm going to out him. Dan Sheets was one of them. This.
Yeah, he's one of the co-founders
and
of
Titan. I told him, this is crazy, Dan. You're a crazy man. his theory, his strongly held belief,
very strongly held,
is that checking a bag is not only acceptable, it is preferable.
Yes.
It is better.
He's a big believer.
To check a bag on purpose.
Yes.
Even if it's a carry-on sized bag.
Even if you could fit it in the overhead.
Even if you could fit it.
Not that you have to. I think he does ultimately take advantage of the bigger bag because he'll have like four pairs of shoes or whatever. He's like, why limit myself?
But
even
if you don't. Yeah.
Yeah, six hats. But even if you don't do that, you should just always check. Yes, that's his
thing. Okay. Nonsense. But here's I will steel man his position, which is crazy. His position is then you get to walk around the airport without a bag. And he's flinging his arms. He's like, look how free I am. And I'm like, that doesn't move me. My bag has four wheels. I just roll it. It's not, it's not that difficult.
He could fill his hand with a beverage of
some
sort. Yes.
That's point number two. Then he's like, then I don't have to fight the plebs for overhead space. And I'm okay. Yeah. I kind of buy that. I fly Southwest a lot. Southwest is just a cattle car, in the air. And so you're fighting normies left and right. And it's terrible. It's like you're at the DMV. And so I get that as a Southwest, connoisseur. I get that you are always kind of like jockeying.
Right. You got to be first on the plane so that you can like get a spot. Yeah,
but it's not that big of a deal. As long as you're not like group C. You're going to have overhead space. You're going to find a spot for your bag. And then he says on the other side, you get off the plane, you kind of take it slow, you grab a beer, and then you walk down to baggage claim and you get your bag and you walk out. And I'm just like, no way, man. I get off the plane and I just walk away because I have my bag. I never risk losing my bag. That's got to be a big thing, right? Fully 15% of bags get lost.
Seems high.
Call it 12. It's still too high.
Sure.
0% of the time do I lose my bag when it's above
when
my head.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So you get there
never
and
lost
you have
a bag
no
I
bag.
On.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is his theory, and I'm telling him, this is crazy. This is nonsense. And I was at this dinner listening to him say this and trying to rebut him. And that's when I texted you and I was like, bags, check bags, no bags. Got to talk about it on the pod. So where do you stand on? Is it a luxury to check a bag or is Dan insane?
Since I've been exposed to this philosophy, because I was definitely a no check, unless, there was times with the kids traveling, we have check bags because there was just no choice.
Of course, if you have 400 to check diapers a bag, and
whatever,
fine. That's fine.
That's the thing. Whatever. But when I'm traveling by myself is obviously the main scenario. I actually have a side story on that too. But in general, I like this philosophy. Actually, I do sort of appreciate it. But for me, if I start, I don't drink on the plane. I don't really care to drink before the plane. Like, I'm gonna have to get up and go pee, and it's just whatever. I don't want to deal with it. So like, I tend to like window seats. So I gotta move past everybody. So I have this whole thing going on.
Yeah.
And when I get off the plane, I definitely don't want to drink or do anything else. I just want to go to wherever I'm going.
Go. Yes.
Now I will say I do feel like check bags come a lot quicker than they used to. Like in recent times when I've checked the bag, I haven't waited. I feel like you used to wait like an hour and a half and just be wandering around.
Exactly.
It's horrible. Like I do think now they seem to be faster. And I do think also if you're in a big city, like in New York, he's in Chicago, where you're going to get a lot of direct flights, like then you don't have as much risk of losing the bag.
That's true.
Usually the losing the bag
plane change is no good.
Yeah. So like you don't have to worry about that. So that's a big thing. I don't know. I kind of see both sides. But okay. I will say I've kind of gone in my recent bigger travels. I have gone the other way from this advice in the sense of, but I wasn't by myself. But when we went to Europe, we were going two big trips to Europe as a family. And the first time we were there for a long time, but still we each had a carry on, we each had a backpack and we had one other bag because just for like overflow of random stuff.
Yeah.
We were going to be there for 2 months and we took all this shit to Europe and it was a pain in the ass, right? Fine. And then we went from Paris to Italy and we did that on the train and it was all right. It was on the fast train and we had to transfer trains from the fast train in Milan to this little local train to get to Lucca, Italy. And on this local train, I've never felt worse about myself literally in my whole life. This is like one of the top couple times I've ever felt horrible about myself, about America, about everything. Because this train was not designed to have everybody has two bags that are pretty big. But it's actually about, right? So I'm in the little, like, when you get onto the train, there's like a little space, okay?
A little landing, yeah.
8x8 landing type thing on this train. And I have all of our bags stacked there. And people are getting on and off this train. And I'm
so
like, this is the most embarrassing, ridiculous thing. What do we need all this shit for? Why do we have 20 bags? It's insane.
American.
Guarding the bags on the train. It was just horrible. Everything about it was horrible. It was the most egregious American overconsumption.
You're probably wearing tennis shoes and a Mickey Mouse shirt, so they know you're American. they would never be caught dead in tennis shoes.
No, everybody knew I was American. There was no doubt about
that.
I could have been in anything. I could have been in rags, and they would have been like, look at this freaking American with his 32 bags of luggage.
Could have been in skinny black jeans, and they'd be like, who's the American wearing our skinny black jeans?
Anything. So then the second time we were like, we are never doing that again. Forget it. So everybody only got a backpack. That was it. Me and my wife had
a backpack?
A backpack. Me and my wife had this bigger Tom Bin kind of like travel backpack thing. So it was bigger than a normal backpack, but it was like the size of a carry-on basically, but like soft-sided. So it was like, we each had one of those. The kids had backpacks. That's it. No luggage.
That is...
And
ruthless.
We were there for 3 weeks that time, and we're like, nope. We're going to make it work. Everybody wears the same couple things anyway all the time. We're just going to only have those couple things, and that's it. We're going to do laundry a few times.
Whoa.
And it was awesome.
Bold move.
Like, it was just like, you can move fast. You can jump on things, jump off them, anything, whatever. We can move quick. It was great. We weren't embarrassed by the pile of luggage. It was fantastic. So that's my advice, is you can make it work. Less luggage.
No way.
Less luggage.
No way I'm taking a family to Europe and we're only taking backpacks. Here's what I would do. I would go to Europe and not go anywhere else. That's what I would do. Like, I would just go to Paris.
Spot. Yeah, that is a plan.
Just hang out there.
But, you know, how often do you get there? It's like, you want to see a couple things.
I don't want to see anything. I'm going to be honest. I don't want to see anything. See, I just want to go.
You're too deep in the muck right now. But in a couple years when your youngest is 6 or 7, like you can actually take them places because they can hold their own luggage and they can do stuff and you don't have to do everything. You know, you don't have to wipe their butt.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, but there's a 0% chance I'm taking a little train to some little town in Italy. We're going somewhere with infrastructure and we're just We're staying at a hotel
for Milan. You're not going on to the next little town spot.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And here's what I'm hearing about the Dan Sheets theory of luggage. I hear that you can intellectually assent to it, but you emotionally you think it's crazy.
Yeah.
You're trying to hedge. You're trying to hedge and be like, "Oh, well, I get it what Dan is saying."
Yeah.
You think it's crazy. I don't abide by that.
Part of me would love the idea of like, "Oh, I have like 5 pairs of shoes. Like I have like 10 shirts and I can just wear whatever I feel like. I can really make a decision in the moment. Like, what do I need to wear tonight or whatever?" But then, in practice, like calling all that stuff around is kind of annoying.
No way. So. No way. All right. Good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page.
Settled.
So
settled.
Sorry, Dan. Bad theory.
All right. Do we want to do tech or we want to go with the other one here? Which one first?
Let's go with the other one first.
All right. So you start, you kick that off.
Topic. So I'm hanging with some people and I'm like, I've got this ambitious goal for my life, you know? And I'm like, "Hey guys, I have this ambitious goal." And they're all like, "Man, you should double it. It's not ambitious enough. You could do that easily." A money goal. Yeah. And I was just like, that's really helpful. Because, right. The water you swim in dictates what you think is normal. Right. And the way that you grew up dictates what you think is normal. And so the way that I grew up, I've got this number and I'm thinking that would be, I would be King Solomon. I'd be richer than any man on earth. And I go to this other thing for these people, or, you know, we're all hanging out and, you know, talking business and stuff. And I'm like, "What if I was King Solomon?" And they're like, "Nah, dog, that's not the right number. You got to double it." And it's great. It's like, oh, shoot, maybe I am. You know, maybe I am thinking small. And so I just came home from this, like, you know, hangout / mastermind thinking, oh, I got to think bigger. I could do a lot bigger. Like, that's really valuable.
Yeah. Being in that mindset, it does change a lot when you realize you can do more than when you think outside that box that you made for yourself of like, well, this is the most I could accomplish reasonably. But then maybe you're just not being reasonable. Like maybe if you get something rolling, it actually could be bigger than your expectation there, right? And it's like, having other people who, you know, in this case, a lot of these people have done that and gone bigger. And
there's perks to being the poorest person there. They're definitely, definitely feel like, oh, I gotta pull myself up by my bootstraps here.
It is tricky because there is like the balance of like, you don't want to set like expectations and then feel bad you don't hit them because it's like, it is unrealistic or whatever, but at the same time, it's like, it's totally doable. Like, you're not talking about like totally $100 million and it's like, okay,
no,
like, you got to start a huge company and like, it's got to be acquired. Whatever. That's a huge thing. This is a more realistic amount of money, but it's just that it's like, you could double it is actually a reasonable goal. Like it's actually not.
Yeah.
If you feel like you could do the baseline, then whatever you think is baseline, doubling that is actually not that much. It's not like saying 100x. It's just double. Like if you tweak one thing correctly, you could get to double. Like that's not an unreasonable outcome.
That blew my mind.
Right.
that part where it's just like, oh, you got to think bigger. Like, well, I thought I was thinking big. And they're like, no, you got to think bigger. You're right.
You thought you were thinking big, but you were just thinking medium.
I was thinking big. I was thinking medium. I need to think large.
Yeah.
It's like one of the later seasons of The Office, which is not, they're not very good. And they host this like small business seminar in the office and they get Kevin to be the hype man and he's running around and his whole speech is basically dream as big as you can and then double it. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I got to do.
You
I gotta dream as big as I can and then double it.
Yeah.
Exactly. It hits harder coming from friends than Kevin Malone on The Office, right. I will say. Yeah, for sure. So it feels good, man.
It's all about it just helps you with the planning aspect too, right? Because it's just like just doing those little tweaks that maybe open yourself up to different opportunities or different paths that you're like, oh, if I wanted to be double, I gotta do this thing or whatever. Like just thinking a little differently there.
Yeah. And I truly, you know, I'm becoming a woo-woo guy. I truly do think
positive thinking
that has a huge effect. Like the ceiling that you set for yourself has a huge effect on the ceiling that you actually hit. And I know that's like, that's probably a little out there, But this whole mind body, this whole sickness, my mind is causing problems. I'm going to crush it in my mind vice. Mind I'm just vice. Big mind. Yeah. I'm mind guy these days. I got to get my mind right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are these lines where like there is, you have to make a different decision to get past the line. Like it's not 100% true, but it's just like, it's like with software, right? Like bootstrapping a software company for the most part is going to put a certain ceiling on what you can accomplish. Like not 100% true. Obviously we can come up with examples of huge companies
come up
that
with
were
three examples.
Right.
That are
like,
huge
but
companies,
in
yeah.
general, like if you take more money and go faster and have more resources to market and do all these things, like you're more likely if you succeed to have a bigger outcome. Now, you're also lowering your probability that you will succeed on any level. Like that is the trade-off you're making there. But even so, that's like the extreme example. But then there's even the small examples like, well, I'm going to put this much money into this, even if you're bootstrapping versus like, well, if I want to go bigger, I want to have higher upside. Maybe I have to put more money in now or more
time spend some
or
money
whatever.
To, yeah.
Right, I got to where I was going to not spend anything and lower my risk. I'm going to spend something. But then if that works, I'm going to have more upside. Even within my somewhat constrained upside of being bootstrapped versus being VC funded or whatever. So it does change your decisions when you think a little bit bigger and outside the box.
Yes, big time.
And what you want to do there, which is,
And I've even started thinking like this whole indie hacker side project thing, like does classifying oneself as an indie hacker, you doing side projects, is that like artificially limiting? Like what if you just said I have
a
business
the other day,
I'm not an indie hacker, I am a serious person doing a serious business venture, and I'm not gonna call it some indie hacker and make cute little jokes about not doing marketing, like That makes a difference, right?
I think so. I mean, so I'm the generation before the indie hacker where we were bootstrappers. But what we were bootstrapping was a company. Like that's specifically what we were doing. We're making a software company, but we don't have the dot-com money where they're just throwing all the money around. So we have to do it ourselves. And that's what we're doing. But we're making a company. That's the mindset. And I do feel like the indie hacker stuff, like this case came up the other day. I saw somebody tweet about like, whatever, they want to make a SaaS a month for 12 months. And I was like, this seems like a very bad idea.
Right.
Like
it's how playing house.
How can you get anything going? Like, you're just spraying and hoping, like, one just totally magically hits. Like, you're not going to put any effort into it, like, because how can you? You have to move on to the next thing next month or whatever. And so I just feel like that's a bad way to start a company. It's like, no, pick the best idea. And then you're going to have to put some time and effort into it. And maybe it's not going to work.
Be serious about it.
But, like, you're going to have to be serious about it if you want to have the upside. And again, like everybody, there's been the five people that did just randomly build something in 2 hours and it took off and they turned it into a big thing. But that's really not how it goes most of the time. You have to put a lot of effort in. It's really hard to figure out.
Takes a lot of work.
The marketing of something and how to reach people, especially the people who actually spend money on the thing you're building versus just the people who you know on Twitter who say it's a cool idea, but are not going to buy it or are going to buy a one user license, which great, $50 a month. That does nothing for you. So like, you know,
calling yourself an indie hacker gives you like a pressure escape valve.
Right.
You're like oh, you know, I failed. I just got, you know, a whole bunch of side projects. And I just feel like it's taken on this patina of fake, almost like an excuse. It's like, oh, well, I'm just an indie hacker. I'm like, well, should we stop calling ourselves that?
I don't know. I don't keep up with how people use the term, but my impression of the term is like, yeah, I'm just doing a bunch of little things and I'm not putting a lot of effort into any of them necessarily or heavy effort.
And you can't criticize me because I'm an indie
and
hacker.
I think
like,
that's doing a disservice. Right.
Yeah,
I think that's just doing yourself a big disservice and you're going to just get more out of picking something and trying it like with max effort, even if it fails, and then do the next thing, because like you're gonna learn a lot about like, oh, like this marketing channel was hard to reach, or I didn't know XYZ and now I do, and like I learned some stuff. I just feel like you're just throwing out, if you're just doing the code part, which is the fun part, right, like
the fun,
then you're not actually learning a lot about the part that actually makes you money, which is the business part. And so that's kind of putting you behind the eight ball a little bit there. what you're going to be able to accomplish, most likely, unless you just get lucky. Not the best strategy usually.
Yeah, it's not a great strategy. Yeah. So is it business magnate? Is that like the opposite of indie hack? Indie hacker? Robber Bear tycoon? Tycoon is
starting
good.
A company? I'm starting a company. Like, that's what I'm doing.
No, we got to play the mental game, Ian. I'm woo-woo guy.
I'm still bootstrapping. To me, bootstrapping is the right name for it, because it's like you're not taking money, but you're starting a company. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you're doing. And that's what it means. But maybe there's another name. I'm open to other names for the kids these days.
Okay, more modern. You keep bootstrapping. I'm going to be an indie tycoon. That's what I'm going to be.
Indie tycoon.
Indie tycoon. It's good. It's cool. It's big. I like it. Indie tycoon. speaking of tycoon and making money, I've got a screencasting training this morning.
Oh, that's right. So what,
I sold like a team license. It's great.
So cool. I love this. So what are you going to be doing?
I don't know, man. So I sold, a license to this company, and they want 3 or 4 seats. I forget how many. And then not a one-on-one, but like a team, like hands-on session. And so here in, 30 minutes, I'm going to be jumping on a call and talking to this team for an hour or so. And I think they basically want to know, like, how do we create compelling content for our company? And it's like, great, I can talk to you for an hour about that easily. But I think that's a good angle that I could try to actively pursue more, is like team trainings, dev ed trainings, like that sort of thing.
So I don't love that.
You're ready.
But I'm ready. I think we're going to use what we just talked about.
Okay.
I don't think you're thinking big enough about it.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Tell me.
You already sell a product, which is hands-on training for how to do screencasting, right?
Okay.
That is your, what you just said, that is your baseline training, okay? Like, there, buy the screencast, it's $300 or whatever.
Uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
The thing you, I mean, whatever, if people want to pay for some additional, like, an hour with you, fine. I'm not saying don't do that, that's great, whatever. But the thing that next levels it
is
what you need to sell is the high-level strategy. So this is for the CEO, for the CMO. How do you internet market? How do you video market? How do you pick topics? How do you build a team? How do you do those things? I've had success doing this. I'm going to teach you how to do it.
Oh,
it's $10,000 or whatever.
Hell yeah.
It's a chunk of money, because you're going to go off and hire 3 people to do this. That means they're going to go spend at least $1 million a year or $700,000 a year. So what is it worth to them to know how to do that correctly? It's worth tens of thousands of dollars. Otherwise, they're going to waste $600,000. I know.
I'm going to be an indie tycoon. This is great.
This is another thing I'm not going to get credit for, but that's all right.
No, of course not. Cut this part out, Dave. This is my idea. Change the voice. This is my idea. Okay, so what you're telling me is the thing that I am teaching is for the normies like me, the people that are executing on the task. The
executors, right.
And I can, scale up, the hands-on, the individual hands-on thing is $1,000. The teams teams pay more, but you're saying that that's capped. At some point, I can only teach the practitioners so much and they get so much value out of it.
And just what you can offer there. And that's also something that's more like you can ship the videos and teach people that and maybe do some hands-on stuff. But yes, the next level up is the real economic value.
The next level up is for the suits. And I teach or talk to the suits about a strategy that they can then hire implementors to do. Right.
You're
and
consultant.
So I teach them, I'm a consultant.
Mm-hmm. And you're teaching them the strategy of how to execute on this type of program so that they can drive business using YouTube and whatever other stuff you're going to have in there. Yeah. But video, how to use video to increase your, funnel. You have to figure out the right keywords for all that stuff and whatever the right angles.
Oh, that was great. Like, how to use video to
here,
increase
up here.
Your
this
funnel.
Is where the budget is. This is where the money is. This is going to be less time and more money. That's what that's going to be.
Wow.
But it's all the economics, right? Like if you teach a person, like, they're limited by their salary. How much salary could they ever make?
Yeah.
Right. So how much could they ever spend? And even if it's done as like training, like even to go to their boss, like I want to get this training. There's only, you can't charge $10,000 for that because every boss in the world is going to say, no, we're not going to spend $10,000 to train you how to do this thing for an hour, 2 hours, whatever. But then you go up the next level, that's where all the money is. It's like, well, the marketing budget of this company is $2 million a year. Well, how now I'm going to save you, or, you know, it might be saving money. It's probably better to, I'm going to make it more valuable.
Yeah.
Your $2 million is going to turn into $10 million instead of your $2 million maybe only making you $2 million back or $3 million or whatever. You're going to increase that upside on your marketing spend.
This is what I'm talking about. This is the good stuff.
There we go. We're making headway here, baby.
Then I could actually, and I would probably have someone else do this for me. I could actually do outbound emailing.
Right.
Or LinkedIn-ing.
Yeah.
I think that could act for $10,000. That could actually, I could do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you could definitely, so that's like, to me, that would be secondary, although definitely feasible. Like, I feel like with your video channels, you could already reach those people. Like, you just have to make those videos, you know, and it's like always that balance you see people doing of like, you can't give away everything, but you're going to give away enough. And like, then they're going to come to you for the actual execution of in their space. Because no matter what video you make, you're going to have some example company or whatever you come up with. That's not the same as like this person in their industry. Whereas you can spend time thinking about their industry, their company, coming up with an actual plan with them and all that kind of stuff. I mean, again, depends how far you go there. If you go that far, now it's more than $10,000, right? Like, it's like, if we're going to have a multi-month engagement where we really hash out your specific problem, that's even more of a larger thing. But I imagine you could also have like a, hey, it's 10 grand for like an 8-hour workshop or a 2-3 hour sessions. I don't know, whatever.
You have to figure that out. But like, I do, you know, I do a week or two of research and then we have a 2-3 hour call.
Something like that. Yeah, right. There's probably different ways. You'd have to figure out the right, you know, way to package it up. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine that there would be people very interested in that because it's very hard thing to understand. I think what works on YouTube, let's just say in particular, what doesn't, how do you make something that resonates? Obviously, everybody sees these ones that do big, but they also see, oh, there's 8 billion of these other ones that have 50 views and they spent tens of thousands of dollars building this video.
Way much money.
And in the end, nobody saw it. The algo trashed them and they don't understand how to make it work and all that stuff. So people are definitely looking for help, I'm sure, with this stuff.
This is the ticket.
There you go.
This is the ticket, man. This is how we double.
What a week you're having. What a week you're having.
Yeah. We got to charge for this podcast.
Not an hour.
This is great. Now we're thinking. Whatever we were going to charge, we got to charge double. I'm on a roll here, man.
Everything double.
This is great. Okay. I dig it. I'm glad I brought it up.
Yeah. This is where we hash these things out. I love it.
That's amazing.
All right. So we'll see where you go with that. But that's exciting.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
I'll keep you posted there.
Keep us posted. All right, so we have one topic left.
We got one.
I'm happy
mostly
about this.
Technical. We've got one technical topic, one so technical. Buckle up, folks. The preamble is over. 53 minutes in, we're ready to go.
I'm very happy about this one, though. So that's why it needs to be the only one. It's
that's
the
right.
only one because it's very important. Which is Taylor Otwell of Laravel has decided to leave the config files in Laravel 11. Which I'm very happy about.
So I'll set the table and then you tell me why you're so happy. So there was a lot of in Laravel there are, you know, 10, 12, 15 config files that are just nicely organized. They just hold variables like what's your postmark keys, you know, what database driver do you want to use, that sort of thing. There are a bunch of them. There's been some conversation that all of those files are overwhelming to newcomers. I can't really say, I haven't been a newcomer to Laravel in a long time. But I feel warm and fuzzy and at home having all these config files. And for a while, he was going to change it to basically like one, just default everything and then have one config file where you basically like configure it using methods on you know, a variable, an application variable or something. And, you know, it kind of went back and forth of, are we doing this to make it easier for newcomers? But does it hide a bunch of stuff? And I think he's settled, apparently. Based on Twitter, he's settled on leaving the config files. So, Ian, how are we feeling?
I'm feeling great. I feel like $1 million. I love the config files. I think they're super important. I love looking in the config files.
Me too.
I don't want to go to the document. I mean, it puts a huge burden on documentation of stuff that's not documented or semi-documented that would have to be done. I think also it was going to be in the environmental file is where you were going to be able to set things like, which to me, see, I don't like mixing those worlds. To me, the environmental file is like for passwords and keys and things like that. I know there are some exceptions of other stuff in there, but that's like,
you're making a distinction between config and secrets, basically.
Yes, exactly. Like the config is something I want to commit to the repo. This is how it's configured. Like this is how it deploys, right? Like there's not an environmental factor to how this works if it's configured like XYZ. Whereas if I'm now like setting my configuration stuff in the environment file, like that's all like a weird mixing of worlds.
Right.
Also makes that's going to make that file really huge, which I don't love. Like I like to just go in there and be like, here's my keys. Here's my database password. That's kind of it. Like there's not like a whole bunch of other stuff I have to wade through in there. So I just think it's better all around. I think it's easier for newcomers. I think it's better for the docs. I think it's better for the users. So I'm very excited.
I love, you know, if there's one thing I love, it's being right. And we were right, baby. This is the way to go.
But see, Taylor, I always trust in Taylor. And in the end,
of course,
Taylor makes the right decision. So
of course, you know, and I didn't for one second, I didn't think this is going to be terrible. I just let go and let God. And you know what? It came out our way anyway. So here we are.
It's all worked out. It's
all worked out.
So that's our big technical item for the week.
For somewhat technical, that's your technical topic. I think we should wrap on, you did a little field work this week. You went to Chipotle.
Shoot, how do we not? We forgot you, to put this down.
I know.
Holy cow.
I know. Thanks to my steel trap, I remembered it. So, first of all, you called it Chipotle's, which is hysterical.
Chipotle.
Not possessive. It's not Chipotle's or Chipotle's.
There are multiple Chipotle. Of the Chipotle.
Yes, there are. However, you went to one, and also you did an apostrophe, which is possessive, not plural. Anyway, you got a bowl of sour cream. What is your ruling?
Okay, so I was like, all right, I'm hungry for lunch. I'll be fair. I DoorDashed it, so I wasn't right there. I didn't get it maximum freshness. So it's DoorDash.
And you also didn't get to control the portions.
Well, I mean, they let you if you. Yeah, that might control the port. I mean, I guess like
if I'm standing there and she's going for her fourth scoop of sour cream, I'm gonna say something, but you're not there. And so the DoorDasher's like, true. Load it up, baby.
So I got the chipotles, I got the rice bowl, some chicken, I like the fajita vegetables,
okay,
I got the black beans, cheese, and sour cream. Now, I will say the photo, there wasn't probably quite as much sour cream as the photo implied. It looked like just a bowl of sour cream.
The photo implied that they gave you all the sour cream.
Yeah. I would say it wasn't quite that bad.
Also, this whole conversation is moot if you DoorDashed it. None of this counts for anything.
I don't know.
There was just some
stuff
that
was wrong. There's just stuff that's not DoorDash related. Like the chicken was dry and it's not because of DoorDash.
It dried out on the way in the guy's car. The guy's smoking weed bringing you his chicken.
The chicken's always dry. And it was insanely spicy, which I thought was a little odd, which I'm fine with spice, but I don't recall. It felt like more spicy than I remember it. So like there's some kind of like quality control.
I think that's an age issue. You're mellowing in your old age. What else?
I've been more into spice as I get older. But and you know, it was fine. It was fun.
Yeah, because it wasn't amazing.
It wasn't. Oh, it used to be amazing. It used to be like, whoa, this is
even DoorDash
awesome. Anytime you had it, it used to be.
No, you were not.
I used to have to go to New York City to get it, and when I was in New York City, so I have a New York City rule, which is I do not eat chain food in New York City because there's so much good food in New York City. You can't
have the opposite
eat that
rule.
Chain. I know, which is why we're going to fix you. This is how part of your problem in New York is you're only eating the chains. That's the bad idea.
It's great. So, I went to Chipotle. The first time I was in New York City, I went to Chipotle. It was awesome.
But
it was great. I was so happy.
I would make the exception for Chipotle because it's the only place I could get it. And I heard it's super awesome. And I would go get it. And it was super awesome.
See,
and it's just not super awesome. And by the way, Twitter agrees with me. Twitter was like, "Yeah, it's not super awesome."
No, yes. no, 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 no. Twitter Matt was Swanson on my side. Agreed with you. Everyone else Max was like, why'd you get so much sour cream? two people, famously contrarian people agreed with you. Everyone else was like, bro, you got too much sour cream. And the fact that you didn't even disclose it was DoorDash,
I not maybe not in the original tweet, but I think I did disclose. But
what a follow-up tweet. Nobody reads a follow-up tweet.
Listen. Okay. I'm going to go to Chipotle's this week. They have a stupid name. Let's just start there, right? You can't even say their name properly. I'm blaming
you can't say their name properly.
I think it's actually a Northeast kind of thing. I think this is one of those Northeast scenarios here.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't know. It was fine. Okay. Like it's not going to be
a worthless segment. I got no valuable insight out of that segment.
Here's a valuable insight for you.
Nothing.
Here's a good insight. What was awesome from the order was I got this, and I never do this because I almost always just drink water, but I was like, I'm getting the Chipotle. I got to have something with it. I got it's just labeled, I think, organic lemonade. Like that's just what the label says, organic lemonade. It was quite good.
I'm unmoved. No.
Like lemonade?
No. I like lemonade. Lemonade doesn't do anything for me.
Not enough aspartame in it?
It's too much sugar. The numbers go up and I don't get the brain shrinkage of aspartame. And so I'm like, what's the point? if this isn't going to shrink my brain and make me forget stuff, why am I drinking lemonade in the first place? Give me a Diet Coke.
Maybe they'll help somebody out there. Oh, Diet Coke.
Speaking of.
Coke Zero, Diet Coke.
I hate to confess, I had two Diet Cokes this weekend when I was out of town.
Okay.
Ian, and they were from the gun. They were from it was basically fountain. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've never been so alive. Diet Coke from the fountain, the bubbles.
That's as much as you can
the
get.
Mix,
28
the
ounces
mix is
of it.
Just right.
Yeah.
The mix is the syrup to carbonation
some
mix.
Dirty ice in there. Just
They're scooping ice out of a big trough.
Right.
Oh my gosh, the bubbles just hit. It was the best.
They are usually bubblier that way, yeah.
There's so much bubblier. I came home and told Jennifer, I was like, man, Diet Coke still hits. It's so good. It is so good. So that was my big confession for the weekend. Yeah, I went too hard. I got two sodas.
Yep.
Remembered what it's like to feel happy, and it was just, it was awesome.
But think about how good, if you limit it to, when you're on vacation, then it's going to be it's just going to add to the high of the trips,
Yeah. And that's what Jennifer and I agreed on when I came home. She was like, I think that's fine. You can't be a monk your entire life. You got to have one every now and then. I'm like, yeah, I agree.
I'm done.
So a little bit of an accountability confession here.
There
but
you go. Every time you have Diet Coke, we want to hear about it.
Better than ever. God, so good. Also, if you're on Twitter telling me that I should just drink water, I invalidate that opinion. People are like, oh, why do you care about Diet Cokes? You just drink water. I'm like, okay, you don't understand what I'm saying.
Modern society, all that stuff.
It's the worst. Like, I'm going to drink water like it's the 1800s.
Like
give me a break.
We have
Diet
liquids.
Coke. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I don't know about this about you. Are you an alcohol man? And are you an alcohol man now? Like, have you switched?
I would never brand myself as an alcohol man.
Okay.
That's
right.
For sure.
That's too heavy.
Do I like to drink alcohol?
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I love to drink alcohol. However, am I an alcohol man? I'm going to have to go with no.
Are you a beer man? Are you a hard liquor man? What's your flavor?
Oh, hard liquor only. I don't drink a lot of beer.
Okay.
Never really have. Just not a big beer guy. There are some beers that I really like, but I'm not like, oh, what can I see your beer menu? I'm like,
you're not like buying beer to bring home.
No, I don't think I've ever bought a 12 pack of beer to bring home to my house.
Wine?
My entire life.
What about wine? Let's cover all the bases.
I like wine. I have pretty low brow tastes. People are like, this is really good wine, and I'm like, it is red.
They're all good.
Tastes like wine. But I will definitely enjoy a classic cocktail.
Okay.
And before all of this health stuff happened, I would drink a lot more cocktails. But now I'm kind of like, on all these weird medicines, I should probably lay off a little bit. So
right.
I probably have, you know, 1 to 2 drinks a week. So not very much. I used to drink wine more on the week, like weeknights have wine with dinner. But now I don't really drink at home much anymore, but if I'm seeing friends, I'll definitely have a cocktail. But am I an alcohol man?
I'm not an alcoholic, just an alcohol man.
No, no, no. Boy, those are close, though, aren't they?
But they're different
meanings. Hey, I'm Aaron. I'm an alcohol man. Like, I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, before kids, we used to go out to dinner and 2 bottles of wine. 2 bottles of wine.
Oh, nice, wow. Dinner out. Between the two of you?
Yeah.
That's a lot of bottles of wine.
Wife is better drinker than I am, actually.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. But would I mean, you call her an alcohol woman? I would call her an alcohol woman for sure.
Would she call herself an alcohol woman? She would.
I think so. Okay. Although lately now she's kind of off it. So we went to this whole bit. She has a whole big wine collection. We have a wine cellar of sorts. Not like a built out wine cellar where
back
it's like
up,
wood
you
paneled.
Have a wine cellar upstairs?
No, it's in the basement, in like the unfinished basement, you know, just like a rack down there. But she has like some nice bottles, whatever, fine. But now like the wine messes up her sleep. So now she's off the wine and we have all this wine, but then she's like, doesn't want to drink
and
wine.
She won't even let you drink the good stuff when you're watching Messi.
I know. So I opened last night, I was making burgers and I was like, I want wine with these burgers. So I went and opened a bottle. So I had to just go find some cheap ass piece of crap bottle. So I was like, in case she didn't want any, I'm not wasting this whole bottle of a good bottle. Like, so it's, we gotta do something here. Cause I gotta have the good wine. I like the good wine. The good wine's better.
Get her
than
a chili pad, get her back to sleep. And then once her sleep is fixed, you all can imbibe
the chili pad. You can have as much wine as you want with a chili pad. They should put that in the advertisements. That's an ad.
Yeah. Are you an alcohol man? Try the chili pad.
Double your consumption with the chili pad.
All right, that's all I got.
You got stuff to do, you got training to do.
That's right.
All right, mostlytechnical.com if you want to just, you know, see all the stuff we've done in the past. At mostlytechpod if you want to hit us up on Twitter, where we may or may not remember your feedback, but you can try. And then mostlytechnicalpodcast@gmail.com if you'd like us to definitely read your feedback and possibly talk about it on the show. So thanks everybody, and we will see you next week.